anybody's.
Good morning. I listened to yesterday's shiur and made a list of 15 topics plus subparts that I said yesterday we will come back to at some point. So today we will come back to at least one of them. The Gemara had asked why a person who denies Tchiyas HaMeisim won't have a portion in Tchiyas HaMeisim, or why a person who denies that Tchiyas HaMeisim is from the Torah won't have a portion in Tchiyas HaMeisim. And we're answered because all of Hashem's midos are mida keneged mida. Hashem acts towards people, say, measure for measure, or according to the pronunciation on the online dictionary, the word is not condine, but kendine. Kendine. Okay. That sounds like Yiddish.
Neither of us was right.
That sounds more like Yiddish. I don't know. But the Gemara started, Bikol Kach Lama, why so far? Which Gemara doesn't ask about any of the other things listed in Mishnah. Yeah, we're not really going to be reading the Gemara too much. I'm just summarizing. So Gemara said, Bikol Kach Lama, why so much? Why so far? So some explain that Gemara's question is, okay, that I understand somebody who denies Tchiyas HaMeisim shouldn't have Tchiyas HaMeisim, but Rashi said in the Mishnah that even if somebody admits there's Tchiyas HaMeisim, but he denies that it's from the Torah, he also has no Tchiyas HaMeisim. And on that, Gemara is saying, why punishment so terrible? The answer is because a person who denies that Tchiyas HaMeisim is in Torah is also denying the truth of Tchiyas HaMeisim, even if he believes that it exists, but denying that it's a fundamental of the Torah, and for that too, he does not deserve to have Tchiyas HaMeisim because everything Hashem does is mida keneged mida. So I found four, or maybe it's three and a half, two of them might be overlapping, explanations for the concept of mida keneged mida. Why is it that everything Hashem does is mida keneged mida, is measure for measure? The Maral in Chidushei Agados on our Gemara writes, "V'yeshecha l'dat od ki kasher midotav shel Kadosh Baruch Hu mida keneged mida, v'zeh noda shelo yavo ra min Hashem yitbarach rak hatov." And the fact that Hashem, everything Hashem does is mida keneged mida, from here we can learn that everything Hashem does is good. Bad doesn't come from Hashem. V'adam mitzad midato she'am odeid mevi alav hara mitzad asmo. Person brings bad on himself. Maral is focusing on, as our Gemara is, mida keneged mida on the punishment side. I think that's how it's more commonly used. Mida keneged mida on the punishment side. Okay. A person inflicts his own punishment on himself. And in order to teach us that, the punishment is mida keneged mida. You shouldn't think Hashem is up there decreeing bad things on people. No, you brought it on yourself. And the proof of that is that it perfectly fits the crime. It gives a mashal. If Reuven would lend money to Shimon, and then Shimon would pay Reuven back, whose money is he paying him? He's paying him Reuven's money. Reuven lent money to Shimon. Shimon paid Reuven back. Shimon paid Reuven Reuven's money. It's not that Shimon gave Reuven something. He just gave Reuven what was his. Similarly, when Hashem pays a person back, he's paying him what was his. This ties in to Nefesh HaChaim that we mentioned yesterday. I think we mentioned it twice already. In Shar Aleph Perk Yudbeis of Nefesh HaChaim, where he explains, and here he's talking about both reward and punishment, that the person creates the reward and punishment himself. Now, it's not exactly the same thing because Nefesh HaChaim is talking primarily about Olam Haba, about spiritual reward and punishment. The Maral is also talking about physical reward and punishment, but they're related. Okay. And a person, through his mitzvos, we say, schar mitzvah mitzvah. The reward of a mitzvah is a mitzvah. When you do a mitzvah, Nefesh HaChaim says, it creates a spiritual light which surrounds you and leads you to do other mitzvos, and that also is your reward in Olam Haba. And I said yesterday that I was going to explain the expression in the Gemara, V'atrotehen tzadikim yoshvim, v'atrotehen v'roshehem tzadik. Gemara says that in tzadikim sit and their crowns are on their heads, and they enjoy the light of the Shekhinah. That's what Olam Haba is. And why does it say their crowns are on their heads, not with crowns on their heads? It's dafka atrotehen. Their crowns are on their heads because a person creates his own, whatever this crown is. The person creates his own. Everybody's crown is the one that he created. So that's the Nefesh HaChaim we mentioned part of yesterday or the day before. And he says that the same thing applies to Gehenim, that the Gehenim is that it's something that the person created himself. Chein onesh haGehenom inyano gam ken kishachet atzmo hu onsho. The sin is the punishment in some way. We'll come back at a later date, talk about this particularly further.
I don't know if this is going to wave too far afield, but that since we think of Shemayim and Gehenim as dichotomous, if you're creating it yourself, can you create individual mixes of the two? And but I guess that's not that way. You know what I'm saying?
Well, as far as your initial assumption, Ramban holds in Shar HaGmul. Ramban wrote a sefer on reward and punishment called Shar HaGmul, and he holds that Gehenim is a physical place. In the same way that he doesn't use this mashal, but I think it's very appropriate. Okay? Today we know there are molecules and atoms and within atoms there are smaller particles, very fine things that are totally invisible. Right? And if you tell a person who hasn't been educated that there are these invisible things flying around inside of him, he'll think you're ridiculous, right? So same way, Gehenim is, according to Ramban, Gehenim is some kind of very fine physical place that we can't perceive. Mm-hmm. But so it's not necessarily true that it's different, that the
I'm just saying the person's place in one and the other, whatever you define them to be. You're either, right, in Gan Eden or you're in Gehenim, and so I created my bag of mitzvahs and averas. Yeah. So am I in both? At some point I get the judgment and decided which one I live with.
Well, the Gemara says that Gehenim, person goes to Gehenim for a fixed amount of time and then goes somewhere else.
So it is so one.
It's one or the other. Not doing both at the same time.
According to the basketball Rav Miller theory, though, it could be.
You mean the no basketball? The no basketball, yes. Yeah, a person, although even then, at any given time, it's one or the other, probably. Yeah. It's an interesting question. Well, there is a medrash called Shar Gehenim, and at some point we can come back and also Sefer Reishis Chochma has images of Gehenim, and we'll come back to that at some time. But that the sefer called Avodas Hakodesh, also Rav Meir Ibn Gabai, also someone from the generation that was expelled from Spain. He was about 12 years old when he was expelled from Spain, and wrote the Sefer later. But he writes, so the Maral sort of focused on the negative side of Mida Keneged Mida. And that's, I think, more commonly how we use the expression, but there's also the positive side to Mida Keneged Mida. And he writes that, explains that Hashem is the source of all good things. And since the Torah comes from Hashem, it makes perfect sense that the Torah reflects the goodness of Hashem. The Torah is what Hashem gave us to be able to receive His goodness. Okay? As Yitzi mentioned last week, the Nesiv Shalom quotes the Zohar that refers to the mitzvos as advice about how to come close to Hashem. Okay? The Torah gives us the tools to come close to Hashem. Now, Hashem, we have this image of goodness flowing through channels or pipes down from Hashem. There's words such as that, sinorot, the pipes of goodness flowing from Hashem. Obviously, it's an image. It's not to be taken literally. The different forms of goodness flow through the different mitzvos of the Torah. And so it makes perfect sense that the reward would be mida keneged mida, because if you go to a vending machine and you press the button for a Coke, you expect that you'll press the button for the Coke and a can of Coke will flow through the pipe and come out the bottom. And if you press the button for potato chips, then a bag of potato chips will flow. Right? So when you press the button for the appropriate mitzvah, okay, you expect the matching goodness from Hashem to come through the pipe. So it's to be expected that it would be mida keneged mida. Moreover, says that if the king says to somebody,
we don't necessarily think that because you do a mitzvah today, you will get a reward tomorrow, maybe not even in this lifetime.
Absolutely true. Correct. But the reward, when it comes, will be something appropriate for what you did.
Well, if that reward comes in a different world, are we so sure of that? I'm just saying, you did a mitzvah of putting on tefillin. Do we know how that reward's going to play out, not necessarily in this world?
No, we don't know. And the Gemara says, "Schar mitzvot b'hai amaleika." In general, there is no reward for mitzvot in this world. Rambam writes that the promises that the Torah makes about this world, if you say every day in Shema, if you listen to Hashem, then you'll gather in your harvest and it will rain at the proper time. So it's a machlokas rishonim. But the Rambam learns that all of those are not rewards at all. They are guarantees that if you do what I want, I will help you further do what I want. So I'll give you plenty of food. I'll give you good health so that you can continue to learn Torah and do mitzvahs. And that's how the Rambam understands. Others understand that, no, there are some of those things are promises of reward. Okay. But this is another thing that was already on our list of things to talk about in the future. But you can look in Ramban in Parshas Bechukosai, talks about this. But the bottom line is that the Gemara says, as a general statement, "Schar mitzvah b'hai amaleika." There's no reward for mitzvahs. Now, according to those who learn that, well, yes, there is some reward for mitzvahs in this world, so they would interpret as "Schar mitzvah b'hai amaleika," not that there's no reward, but what it's making a statement that this world is not actually big enough to hold the reward. Okay. Michtav Eliyahu explains that the statement, Schar Mitzvah Hayal Maleka, there's no reward, it's near the beginning of Michtav Eliyahu, there's no reward for mitzvahs in this world, that in light of another statement, that Yafeh Sha'ah Chat Ba'olam Haba, Yafeh Korat Ruach Shal Sha'ah Chat Ba'olam Haba Mikol Chei Olam Hazeh, the enjoyment of 1 hour of Olam Haba is greater than all of Olam Hazeh. And Michtav Eliyahu says that the not just the Olam Haba itself, the pleasure of Olam Haba, if you imagine walking past a bakery early in the morning and smelling the fresh donuts, it's not the fresh donut that's better than all of Olam Hazeh, it's the smell of the fresh donut. So if just the smell of Olam Haba, forget about the Olam Haba itself, if just the smell of Olam Haba is greater than Kol Chei Olam Hazeh, than an entire lifetime in Olam Hazeh, then how could there be reward for mitzvos in this world? We're not really going to be looking inside anymore. I just read one line, and that probably is it for today. Just the smell of donuts. We're talking about the smell of donuts. So just imagine walking past a bakery early in the morning and smelling the donuts. And when I was in fifth grade in Haifa, I walked past the bakery every morning on my way to school, and it's the smell is still with me. Okay, and that's better. The smell of Olam Haba is better than all of a lifetime in Olam Hazeh. So how could there be reward for mitzvahs in this world? Okay,
if you pay for the smell,
don't have to pay for smells. Okay, so the getting back to the Avodas HaKodesh. So he says, so since the Torah is the tool that Hashem gave us to get his goodness, so you would expect that appropriate forms of goodness come through each of the mitzvahs. And Howie, further addressing your question, right, we know there are 613 mitzvahs, parallel 248 parts of the body and 365 parts of the body, and the idea is that that different mitzvos affect somehow different parts of the body, right? So in a spiritual way. So when a person wears tefillin and he gets Olam Haba, his reward is somehow going to affect his, you know, his head and his arm in a spiritual sense. How, you know, again, we have no idea.
Okay. I actually found when I was in Florida, Rabbi Shapiro mentioned it's a pre-Hayitzchak. It's the book, the Sefer of Mesh.
What Sefer?
Pre-Hayitzchak.
Yeah.
We had learned about Nefesh HaChayim, that there was such a Sefer that explained the connection between the 613 body parts and the mitzvahs.
Okay.
So I don't know. We have to find out which part the filling affects.
It seems
that there's an actual physical connection.
I would guess that if such a safer exists, we wouldn't understand it.
No, it definitely exists. He has a copy of it.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's not easy to find, and you may not have it if I can find it.
Tell me the name again.
Pre-Hayitzchak.
Okay.
Google it at your point. Okay. It's not an easy statement.
Okay. So the Avodas HaKodesh continues. He says that, you know, if a king tells his servant, do such and such, and I'll give you a reward. You know, tell a kid, mow my lawn, and I'll give you $20. Or tell a younger kid, mow my lawn, and I'll give you a candy. Okay. There's no connection between the candy and the action. You probably don't say, mow my lawn, give you a candy. Bring me my shoes, and I'll give you a candy. I don't know. Okay. Or mow my lawn, and give you $20. There's no inherent connection between the lawn and the $20. Okay. And in a way, that cheapens both the mitzvah and the reward. Whereas if the reward is mida keneged mida, it something that's inherently part of the good deed itself, okay, it increases the value in our eyes. of the good deed and of the reward. They're a package. It's not something random. You know, I could give you $20 for mowing my lawn. I could give you a pizza for mowing my lawn. It's totally random, and therefore its value is less. So mida keneged mida. And incidentally, he in Avodas Kodesh here, he doesn't use the expression mida keneged mida at all. But that's what he's explaining in part. And so those are, would explain, also explains the negative, but explains the positive aspect of mida keneged mida. So that is either one or two approaches. I don't know. I think it's sort of just the opposite side of what the Maharal is saying, but it could be viewed as a separate approach. Again, the Maharal was talking about punishment and said that the reason punishment is mida keneged mida is to emphasize to a person that it was self-inflicted. Hashem does not dole out bad things. When bad things happen to you, it's because you brought them on yourself. Now, discussion for a different time, tzadik v'ralo and yisurim shel ava and so on, and as well as the concept of nisayon, sometimes Hashem tests people. Those are all things that you could just attack my statement that when bad things happen to you, you brought them on yourself. Those are all separate discussions. We'll just acknowledge them and leave them aside right now. It's not that's not the topic right now. But what the Maharal is saying is that, as a general matter, if something bad happens to you, you brought it on yourself as a punishment for something you did.
What about the flip side of what you said, that this true punishment not exists in this world, that the world can't contain it?
No. It's just as punishment, no. That's... there is not such a statement. Okay. And perhaps that's a chesed of Hashem. Really, the punishment for an avera, just like the reward for a mitzvah is too great for us to imagine, the punishment for a mitzvah should be too great for us to imagine. But Hashem's kindness is that he does punish us in this world so that we could have a more full experience reward in Olam Haba. Cleans the slate, punishes us, and you're right, logically, the reward should not fit. Now, it says that Rishayim get their reward in Olam Hazeh, so that they can, just be written off in Olam Haba. How is that possible if there's no reward for mitzvos? So one explanation possibly is that a person, because a person is rewarded according to his own value system. So if his idea of reward, if he thinks I'm doing mitzvah so I can get a Ferrari, well, if that's his value system, then that's his value system. And yes, he can get a Ferrari and all of that. But true reward for mitzvahs could not be in Olam Hazeh.
Okay. The Talmud Devar, at least the part that I've learned, not Kabbalah part, devoted to positive aspects of the negative.
The first part of Tomer Dvorah is devoted to emulating Hashem's midos, not reward and punishment. It's this is how Hashem behaves. Hashem, even though we do averos, Hashem continues to sustain us. Therefore, even if somebody hurts you, you should continue to be nice to him and things like that. That's emulating Hashem's midos. That's not reward or punishment in the sense of mida keneged mida.
Maybe it's just a slant of the book, that I'm learning.
There is.
It seems to be, maybe, all right, yes, you're supposed to emulate Hashem. You emulate Hashem, then you deal kindly with people. Hashem will deal kindly with you. You go sometimes beyond Mishur HaSadin, then Hashem will go beyond.
If I recall correctly, he does say that. It's not the focus of the Sefer. The focus of the Sefer is to teach us how to behave, because it's a mitzvah to emulate Hashem. It's a mitzvah for us to act as Hashem acts, and therefore this is how Hashem acts, so this is how you should act. Do vaguely recall there's a tangent,
maybe
what you said, but it's at most a tangent. Could be. I don't recall. A second approach towards the concept of Mida Keneged Mida, which I think is probably, if you would ask most people, why does Hashem act Mida Keneged Mida? This is probably the first thing that comes into a person's head is Hashem punishes us in a way that matches our averos to help us recognize our averos and thereby and be able to do tshuva. If punishment was random, then we wouldn't know what it was for, and it wouldn't serve its intended purpose, because Hashem doesn't punish us to be vindictive. Hashem punishes us to improve us. And so, since we're not Nevi'im, Hashem doesn't talk to us. The only way that the punishment can help us is if it matches the crime, so that we can look, oh, I wonder why that happened. Oh, that happened because of such and such. So that's Chasam Sofer in Drushos, Drusha for Ches Teves Drushei. Now, that raises a danger that a person, as I said, we're not Nevi'im, and we sometimes think that we know why things happen, and there are, even among contemporary Gdolim, there are different opinions about how far to take this. I have a Rebbe who is a Talmud of Rav Yaakov Weinberg, the Tzal Rosh Yeshiva Neir Yisrael, and he says in the name of Rav Weinberg that, for example, if a person has a car accident, then a person should think to himself, it's not absolutely that this is the reason, but car accident is sort of like skila. The skila is getting thrown off a cliff and having an impact. A car accident is a sudden impact. Person should revisit how he is keeping Shabbos. Not that a person should say, oh, I had a car accident because I was mechallel Shabbos. Might not even be that a person was mechallel Shabbos, but maybe a person's Shabbos is not as meaningful as it should be. Maybe, and of course there are different severities of car accidents. So a person should at least revisit how he's keeping Shabbos. Is he keeping Shabbos to the maximum extent? Gemara says that even though nowadays we don't have Misas Beis Din, but we do have the din of Misas Beis Din, the law of Misas Beis Din, that Hashem, if a person chokes, okay, so it's suffocation, he should look at the list of averos that for which a person deserves the punishment of chenek, the punishment of suffocation, and just check, how am I doing on this one? How am I doing on this one? Do we know for sure? Absolutely not. And equally importantly, okay, if, you know, Shmerel chokes on a bone, it's not our job to say, oh, Shmerel, this is why it happened to you. It's the person's job, okay? Every person, or if he asks his Rav, so his Rav should, you know, he discuss it with his Rav. But it's not anyone else's job to be a prophet and so, oh, this happened because of this Avera or that Avera. That's absolutely, absolutely improper. Okay? But even for ourselves, we're not Nevi'im. We cannot say definitively. Okay? Sifsei Chaim says at the end of Sifsei Chaim, Emunah Vashkacha, Volume Aleph, okay, says that Amkut Maaseh Hashem Yitbarach Inam Poter Otanu Milishtadel L'Lmod Kol Ma Shenuchal L'Lmod Lifnei Katz Yichleinu. The depth of Hashem's actions do not exempt us from trying to understand whatever we can understand. However, skipping, he then quotes our Gemara, Shekol Midotav Shalkadosh Baruch Hu Mida Keneged Mida. All of Hashem's midos are Mida Keneged Mida. He says, Ulam Anu B'Madregateinu, we on our level, are Bei Pamim Ein Yadinu Maseget Lavin V'Pratut L'mam Chuvenet Yad Hashem V'Brach. We often, maybe most of the time, cannot understand exactly why Hashem is doing X. But he says that we have three obligations. When something happens, says we have three obligations. Number one, to say Hashem is a tzaddik. Everything Hashem does is for a reason. Number two, to strengthen our own emunah, that everything that happens is for our own good. And number three, to see that Hashem is awakening us, if not to, in a specific way, because typically we won't know, but in general, Hashem is telling us, you know, Hashem is telling us, pay attention. So, a number of years ago, there was a tsunami in Indonesia, devastated parts of Indonesia, and I heard people going around saying, it's because of Lashon Hara. How in the world the tsunami in Indonesia is connected to Lashon Hara, if it is at all, only a Navi could tell us. Certainly, anything that happens out of the ordinary is a wake-up call of some kind, but it's not anybody's place, since we don't have Nevi'im. I mean, we have Gdolim, and they know things that we don't know. They can suggest connections, but nobody can claim to know. Okay, something happens because of so this or that. We can look in Sfarim and see, oh, Chassam Sofer said this kind of punishment happens because of this kind of Avera, and maybe that's why something's happening, or maybe not. What the Sisi Chaim is saying, it's a general wake-up call. Okay? We should, you know, look at our deeds in general. Some suggest more specifically, okay, a certain thing might be a message, look at your Shabbos, look at this, look at that. We can never know for sure because we don't have Nevi'im. And all we can, but we're missing the point if we ignore it totally and don't think Hashem is telling us something.
So I heard about a dramatic example that yesterday. I was making a video about the last days of Pompeii, when the Vesuvius erupted.
Yeah.
And buried them in 80 feet of the grave. That was it. Boom. Time stopped. It was very literally buried alive. And never rediscovered for 1,000 years later. Similar, I'm just bringing that up because it's weird. I don't know. None of us know. Why did they get buried at Pompeii? We know something dramatic happened. And we know that there was some kind of wake-up call for the people. Or
not for them.
For the next generation.
Right. Right. For us. For us. Or for the Jews. Or for the Jews living, you know, 100 miles away, who didn't get buried by Vesuvius. Yes, something. Okay? So, you know, if Puerto Rico gets devastated by a hurricane, okay, A, we have no business saying they're being punished for such and such. We have absolutely no business saying that. Nor do we know that Hashem is telling us anything specific. But we know Hashem's, anytime something happens, whether it's Vesuvius erupting, or a hurricane, or if somebody, you know, stubs his toe, it's for a reason. Something, but, so Sif Sichaim is saying, at very least, it should be a general wake-up call. If a person himself thinks he can connect it to something he did, great. Okay. A person together with his Rebbe. But not for anybody else. Certainly not for anybody else to go say, "Oh, the reason that happened to you is because of such or such thing."
So the people that were going around, whoever they were, saying that the tsunami was because of Lashon Hara, even if they were wrong, it's accomplishing something if one person thinks, "All right, well, I don't want to be responsible for a tsunami." It doesn't say Lashon Hara.
Except what it's more likely accomplishing, because it's presumptuous for anybody, certainly for us, to draw such a connection, and or even to repeat such a thing because we don't understand it. If I would say Rabbi so and so said that, okay, I don't understand it. So maybe it will make someone not say Lashon Hara, or maybe it will cause a Chil Hashem and cause people to mock. Jews or rabbis, I'm not sure, because, you know, unless you can explain the connection. Okay. if you can explain the connection, then maybe. But
the people that are going to mark, they can always find something.
I wasn't talking about late sim. I was talking about common Jews. Okay, we're not in the VM. We don't know, and worry. And furthermore, it's that we don't know how Hashem runs the world. And again, it's not for me to say Hashem brought a tsunami to tell you not to speak Lashon Hara. If I want to introspect and learn something from it, great, I should do that. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's not for me to tell someone else.
It's like a doctor telling everybody that they have cancer, be right sometimes. But the other people that have heart disease or something else, they have wrong advice, so they didn't get the message.
Right.
You know, it's like telling everybody don't smoke. Everybody, nobody should.
But we might have individualized messages.
I'm not talking about medical marijuana. Regular smoking.
I heard a shiur from Rabbi Breidowitz, which he talked about. Now, Rabbi Winters at Salo, as you say, hide behind a tank. So the tank I'm hiding behind right now is Rabbi Breidowitz. And this was a shiur about the Holocaust and, separately, AIDS, the AIDS epidemic. And he said, can we as a society say that it seems, mida keneged mida, that these things happen because of a certain avera? Seems reasonable. I mean, you can tie the original AIDS epidemic, later it spread to innocent people, but it generally attacked two specific groups. It would seem that God's sending us a message. But could we dare to extend that and say the reason so-and-so got AIDS was because either he's in this category or that category? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It's total chutzpah. Right. Mm-hmm. Same thing. We could look at society and think maybe the Holocaust happened because of this or that. Now, the problem there is that some people say the Holocaust was because of Zionism, and other people say the Holocaust was because people were not going to Eretz Yisrael. So obviously that's not going to work out. But could we then extend it to say, and the reason so-and-so was killed in the Holocaust is because of this? Absolutely not. And so you have to be very, very careful anytime you start getting it, into these things to
once you put it into words, once you start verbalizing these things, the danger increases tremendously.
Absolutely.
You're saying you're thinking this morning about one of these connections. What has happened in your mind? And then maybe today's discussion help you.
It's right. And it's and it's
turn around and tell the next guy.
Exactly.
Today we learned, why the Holocaust.
Right.
Correct.
The mida keneged mida, the message of the mida keneged mida is for the person involved. Okay. The third or fourth approach to mida keneged mida, and this is from the Sforno and the Parshas Yisro. Yisro says, now I know that Hashem is greater than any other power because he punished the Egyptians mida keneged mida. So Sforno says, and Netziv says, and Netziv actually quotes the Sforno, cites the Sforno, that what Yisro saw that made him say that Hashem is greater than any other power is. If I was going to punish you for something, I could make the punishment fit the crime in a vague, general sort of way. But with the Egyptians, every single detail of the punishment that Hashem brought on them fit their crime. That is something only Hashem can do. And so Mida Keneged Mida teaches us the greatness of Hashem, the awesome power of Hashem, that he could make the punishment fit the crime down to the last detail. And that is the message of Vazeho Ragdulato Kol Elohim. This demonstrates Hashem's greatness over any other power. Okay? Because the Chazal tell us that the Egyptians, they already thought about this. Like, all right, we'll throw the babies into the water because Hashem said he wasn't going to bring up another flood, so we'll be safe, right? They were already thinking about this, and they didn't think that Hashem is powerful enough or clever enough to punish them for everything that they were doing, right? No, that's exactly what Hashem did. And that, so it shows us Hashem's awesome power. The Rav Kook, who was a student of Netziv, takes this idea in his commentary on the Ein Yaakov of Masechet Brachos, the ninth perek, and he explains, the Gemara there discusses, we have a bracha of Shasani Sima Avoteinu, that is a bracha, a general bracha that Hashem did miracles for our ancestors. There are also brachos on private miracles. Gemara says, I understand making brachos on public miracles. It wasn't so obvious to me that you should make a bracha on a private miracle, and the Gemara discusses that, and the halacha is that there are private miracles a person would make a bracha on too. So Rav Kook, using the same idea, explains that the private miracle shows Hashem's attention to every detail. Just as Mida Keneged Mida addresses every detail. It's not just a general in a general way the punishment fits the crime. Down to every last detail, the punishment fits the crime. And so too, Hashem takes care of every detail, and therefore not only big public miracles deserve a bracha, but on a private level. Now, there are halachos about what constitutes a miracle that you would say a bracha on. It's discussed in the Mishnah Berurah. But just the idea that the details deserve brachos as well, because they're also reflections of Hashem's attention to detail, and that's based on this idea of the Sforno and the Netziv that Mida Keneged Mida is meant to show Hashem's attention to detail and to press upon us Hashem's attention to detail. Rav Eliyahu Lopian and Lev Eliyahu. Parshas Bo, page Nun Gimel. He addresses a question of why. Questions asked by others as well. But he doesn't quote this Chazal, but the Chazal say that it was time to take the Jews out of Mitzrayim, and they had no zchus. So Hashem gave them mitzvah of Dam Pesach and Dam Milah, of Korban Pesach and Bris Milah. So, Farshim ask, if it was time to take Jews out of Mitzrayim, why do they need this class? Okay. When class is over, you don't need excuse to get out of class. Class is over. Right. So Farshim Karen Ledovid on the Gadash Shel Pesach, my grandfather's Rosh Hashiva, he explains that Hashem was going to take them out of Mitzrayim, but they needed a zchus to be taken out in a miraculous way. That's where the Lev Eliyahu comes in. Rav Eliyahu Lopian says, in order for Hashem to act in a way that's beyond nature, you have to go beyond nature because of Mida Keneged Mida. So Hashem, to the Dam Pesach and the Dam Mila was for people to go, you might say, out of their comfort zone. And then Hashem also went beyond nature. Mida Keneged Mida. Okay. So that is an overview of... And three and a half ways of understanding Mida Keneged Mida.